He has played for two local teams in Australia, in Perth, I believe, which we'll chat about, I'm sure, before moving back to his hometown and joining up with Greenock Morton in 2017. With brief spells at Queen's Park and Carlisle United, Jack joined Cambridge United in 2020 and was part of the League One promotion success. Jack has had many challenging times over the years with some injuries, but his resilience is just phenomenal with his management of type 1 diabetes. He is an inspiration to all, showing that anything is possible with type 1. And Jack was diagnosed with diabetes Christmas time, I believe, in 2009, age 13, I think. And tonight we welcome Jack to the Diabetes Chat. Hey, Jack, how are you, my friend?
Hello, mate. Thank you for having me. What an intro that was.
You can tell I've been doing a bit of prep, eh?
Don't mind it.
How are you? You all good?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. I'm hanging in there. I'm going through another injury at the minute, so
Yeah, absolutely. But it's great. It's great that you're here and you've got this hour with us tonight. And if anyone wants to get involved, like I said, Diabetes Chat, or you can request a microphone. But we've got so much to talk about. So let's start with our quick fire questions. And these are just to get to know you a little bit more. Primarily, it's all about diabetes, our chat tonight. But yeah, let's kick off. Question one. What is your name and occupation?
So my name is Jack Idle, and I'm a professional footballer.
When were you diagnosed with diabetes, and how old?
I think it was Christmas 2009. I was either 12 or 13. I can't quite remember. So just over half my life now I've had it.
Yeah. So my research, I did pretty well, eh?
Yeah, you've done well.
I'm not stalking, right? Do you finger prick or use smart technology, and what do you use?
So I've got an AccuCheck mobile that I've always got on hand, and then whenever I've got access to them, I use the Freestyle Libras.
And back in the day, assuming you did finger prick, yep. Did you change the lancets every day?
Did I change the lancets every day?
Yeah.
Was I supposed to?
That's the correct answer.
Nice one, Jack. Do you use insulin pens or pump?
Insulin pens.
Are you hypo aware?
Yeah, very.
What symptoms do you typically have, Jack?
All of them. Really hungry, can't really concentrate, my vision goes a bit, increased heart rate, just literally any signal you could think my brain would send, it does. So
yeah,
quite fortunate to have that, I guess.
So what's your go-to hypo treatment then?
When I'm playing or training, it's a bottle of Lucozade Sport or just any sort of sport drink. Just super quick, get it down, I can get back on the pitch. But then when I'm at home, if there's any Weet-Bix or cereal within sight, they get absolutely hammered.
Doesn't Lucozade have half the sugar now? Isn't that a thing?
A normal bottle, I think, for me, has got about 35 grams of carbs, and that's all I need just to get myself back into game mode, really.
Awesome.
What do you think's worse, Jack? Feeling hypo or feeling hyper? What would you say is worse for you?
I think when my sugars go high, I feel a lot worse. It seems to take a lot longer to get them under control, whereas when I go low, I can eat or drink something straight away, and that that does the job a lot quicker than when I'm high.
Yeah, like you say, you can respond quicker, whereas when you're high, it might take longer to come down and I guess feel more rubbish for a more longer period
exactly,
of time. What one thing do you like about diabetes and one thing you don't like about diabetes?
I think it's made me become a lot more of a disciplined person, which I think has helped me in my career.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I don't like is sometimes you just get overwhelmed with always having that extra thing to think about. It can just get on my nerves every now and again. I have a rough day, but what can you do?
Absolutely. Do you love or hate the smell of insulin?
I don't really love or hate it. It smells a bit weird, but it doesn't.
Yeah, you're not bothered either way.
Nah, it doesn't bother me.
And our last question, a bit of fun. Assuming you're on a desert island, right? And you've got all your diabetes kit there. We always send our guest speakers there. So we've got about 30, 40 guest speakers currently on this island. So you're on this island, Jack. What three things would you take if I give you a wish and you could take three things?
I'm assuming I can't take a boat to get off the island now. Does that just ruin the question?
Well, you can take whatever you want. You've got three things, right?
I'll take a football.
Yep.
Take my iPhone, really. But I'm not going to be able to charge it anywhere, am I? No, I'd take a football. I'd take insulin, I guess, because I need to stay alive. And then a lot of food. To go around.
There you go. Brilliant stuff. So there you go, guys. There is Jack's quickfire 90-second questions. Just a bit of fun to start us off, really, on tonight's amazing guest speaker chat. I am now going to, Jack, hand over to Gary. He is our co-host, and he is going to go down sort of memory lane and talk about your journey with diabetes, when you were diagnosed, up to the present day. So over to you, Gary.
Thanks, Tom. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
So I'm just going to go through your diabetes diagnosis, and I know that Tom went through a wee bit of it there, but we're going to delve into the fun bit. Now, I'm going to say to you, please do not talk about football, because it'll just pass right over me. I don't even know anything about football. So if you say anything football-related, hopefully somebody will be able to jump in and save me with this bit. And
the good old football section's coming next with me, mate.
That's so, fine then. So I'm in the safe, Mark, then, so it's fine.
You're in the safe zone.
So we'll start off with, so Tom did just say you were diagnosed around about 12 or 13, is you can't actually fully remember. But can you just share with the community your diagnosis with diabetes, and where were you diagnosed, and kind of a little bit about that, just to give us a wee insight into it?
Yeah, so I was back home in Australia. I was in my first year of high school. So that was already quite a big transition for myself, doing all that stuff. And it was a slow process of at least a month of feeling quite rubbish, really. Just thought it was a bug or a sickness or something. But the symptoms kept popping up. You know, I'd have a couple nights where I was waking up 12 or 13 times to go to the toilet, and being really, really thirsty. And back then, my favorite drink was full-fat Coke. So to quench the thirst, I was having full sugar Coke. So you can just imagine the spiral that I was in there. So that happened a couple of times, and Mum was quite switched on. She picked up on a couple of symptoms. I'd lost 6 kilos in 2 weeks by this point, super weak and feeling rubbish. So I went into the doctor, who I knew really well, and he said, yeah, we'll check your sugar levels. They should be between 4 and 8. So I did the test, and they came back 32. So he said, right, we'll get yourself up to the hospital. You've probably got type 1 diabetes. So from then on, it was a bit of a whirlwind. I went up and spent a week in the young adult or teenager ward, and basically just got the diagnosis there. And for that week, I spent living there, learning all about diabetes with the team that they had, and teach me how to deal with it and what it is and how to manage it. So yeah, it was all a bit of a whirlwind, really, when that happened. But when I spent that week in the hospital, came out feeling ready to go, but still there was so much to learn for me.
And I think that's the thing with diabetes, it's a ongoing learning experience. That you think you've mastered it, and then the next day something else pops up, and it's a new learning curve that you're taking. And
exactly, yeah. And there's some stuff that works for you but wouldn't work for someone else. It's not like a universal handbook that the rules are the rules. You know, they've got guidances, but a lot of the time it's your own personal experience that you need to figure out.
Yeah, and I think that a lot has changed. So my diagnosis was a little bit earlier than yours, and it did used to be a rule book that everybody got, the same rule book. And I think that they mastered that rule book doesn't work for everybody. So it's crazy that they used to think of that. And it must have been hard, especially with your favourite drink being full fat Coke, because you think you're getting better, but in actual fact, it's detrimental to you because it's rising your blood sugars that much that your body's struggling to try and cope and bring it down. So,
exactly, yeah.
It's like a double-edged sword. It doesn't matter what way you go in it. Now, there is, I don't know if you want to share any of your stories. Like, I know you just shared a bit of time about your time in hospital and like coming home and learning a bit. But is there anything like hypos or that you'd like to share with anybody? Like your first hypo, what that experience was like, or is that something you don't like talking about?
No, ask me anything. I'm open book.
So, with your first hypo, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, well, the nurses and the team at the hospital sort of explained what the symptoms mm-hmm. and stuff were. And I remember it was a couple of days after I got home from the hospital. My auntie and my cousins were around just hanging out. And I was on the couch watching TV and they were all out the back having a barbie or something, chatting. And I just started to feel really weird. And it was not a feeling that I'd ever had before. Mm-hmm. So I just put two and two together and thought, oh, this must be something to do with the diabetes. And I went out the back and I said, Mum, I think I'm low, but I'm not sure. So she got the glucose monitor out and checked it, and I was 3.9. So I was, that was, all the symptoms that started to kick in super early. But yeah, that was my first experience of the low and sort of learning what I should be looking out for and what I'm going to feel like when I do go low.
Yeah, and being at such a young age, and I know that you did just speak about this as well, starting high school and just being diagnosed with diabetes, how was that for you? Like, how did you cope in school? Like, having to go in, and because there's all this pressure of trying to fit in at school, as we all know. I think we all do it. We try and fit in with people and try and make friends and talk to people. But with diabetes, it's a completely different dimension because there's other things that you've got to think about. How did you find that?
Yeah, it was tricky, but I think I was really quite fortunate. I grew up doing judo at quite a decent level, and two of my training partners were type 1 diabetic, and they were both national judo champions. So even before having diabetes, you know, I was around people who were type 1 diabetic mm-hmm. competing at the top level in their sport, and I could see they have their struggles with it every now and again, but they go out and it's not stopped them from doing what they want to do. So when I was diagnosed, I had their support straight away in terms of having that confidence of knowing that, oh, it's not going to stop me if I do the right stuff. And in terms of school, I was also quite fortunate that, you know, I had a lot of friends at school. I was already good at football. Mm-hmm. I was in the football team. So I'd made those relationships and I was in that friendship group already of a stable group of mates who, you know, let's be honest, mates are always going to take the mickey out of you and do the jokes, but it's coming from a good spot. And I had their support. And also, I was the only kid in class that got to have jelly beans in his pencil case. So that made me pretty popular as well.
That's the one thing. That was the one thing I loved about diabetes at school as well. I always
everyone,
had sweets.
Yeah. Everyone wanted to be mm-hmm. your best mate when you had jelly beans in your pencil case. Yep.
And I think that's great. And do you know what else is great? The fact that you had two judo instructors that were at the top level of their sport and choice of sport being type 1 diabetic, because it shows you that there is no stopping you with diabetes. You should be able to do what everybody else is doing and what you want to do with your life. You should be able to do it, and I think that's the great thing. So I'm going to jump on to just getting to know a little bit more about what you're doing just now. Now, I know that you did say that you're still on insulin injections. And is there any new ways in how you administer your insulin, or is it just the same regime that you've always done in terms of, is it just the same amount of Jags, or is there things changed and altered as you've went along in time and learnt about your condition?
Yeah, so I've had the same insulin pens. I've got NovoRapid for my fast mm-hmm. acting, and I've got Lantus for the slow release. The only thing that's changed really is the dosage. As I've got bigger, my dosage has increased. I used to do one big Lantus dose before I went to bed, but when I had a bit of trouble with keeping my sugars under control for a little bit there, I changed it to, I half the dosage at night and then did another half in the morning, and that seems to really work well for me. But it's this routine that I've got has always worked, so I've never really seen a reason to try and find something else. I do my injections with my food all the time. I've got my game day routine. I've got my training day routine. I feel like I've got that nailed pretty much. Obviously, my body weight's flattened out, and I've got my training schedule. I've got my gym schedule. So after a definite trial and error period in the first couple of years, I'd say it probably took me 5 or 6 years to actually find what really does work for me in terms of football. Then I think I've got it nailed pretty much. So yeah, the only thing that has changed is just the dosage amount.
And that sounds about right for everybody. I think that's the thing we all find is the dosage amount change. And it's good to hear that you've found all of these techniques and you've mastered how your diabetes works in training days and match days and things like that. And that is good to hear. And I know Tom did ask how you check your blood sugars and that. So you did say that you use Libre 2 when you have access to it in terms. So do you tend to favour more finger pricking over flash or would you prefer to constantly just use Libre or a CGM?
Yeah, no, so I get the Libre on prescription. So whenever I've got access to the Libre, I've got it in my arm, especially when I've got a lot of fixtures in that 2 week period. You know, I feel like it's a bit of a waste to use it when I've only got one game per week, but there's often times where we've got two games per week and I feel like I can really get the use out of it. So I've always got both in the change rooms, but I do like the Libre because it also tells me what direction I'm going in. And I really try and keep a strict eye and really hit a particular target for when I'm playing to play as fit and feeling as good as possible.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that with technology, because it tells you the trajectory you're going, whether you're rapidly rising, rapidly dropping, staying steady, I'm assuming that helps in terms of your everyday life for football when you're doing football, but also in terms of like your well-being for knowing that it's able to tell you what's happening during a game and it's a quick process to do. I'm assuming that benefits you that way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a fast thing. Tells me what direction I'm going in. And, you know, it just tells me, oh, I need a sip of juice or I might need a quick injection here or I can be mentally at ease thinking, oh, my sugar levels are under control. I'm good to go here. And at the same time, like day-to-day life, it helps because for the longest time there, I was having to leave the house with my full kit with my glucose monitor and all my needles and my insulin pens in it. But now, when I've got the sensor in, it feels like I'm traveling so much lighter because I can just put my insulin pen in my girlfriend's handbag or something and I've got the app on my phone that tells me what my sugar levels are. So in terms of just day-to-day life and convenience, the Libre really does help me with that.
Yeah, and that I think that's what's great. It's you don't need to carry as much with you as what you used to when you were first diagnosed because I remember my school bag used to be jam-packed with everything and anything in it and you forget how much you used to carry. And now I look and I'm like...
I used to have so much as well.
Now I look and I'm like, oh, I've got a phone and my insulin pump stuck to the side of me and basically that's what everything I take out with me and I think it'll be fine. What's the worst that will happen? So...
Yeah, exactly.
Following on from that, over the time you've had diabetes, because I know that you have just come up recently hitting your 13-year anniversary, has there been any challenges that have occurred along the way and how did you deal with these sort of challenges?
Challenges, I think, for me, the biggest challenge was just trying to find my optimal level of what I need to do with my diabetes to be able to play football. It took me, like I said before, a good couple of years to find out where my sugar levels needed to be, what I needed to be eating, how long before a game I needed to be doing my insulin, just all of these things that footballers who haven't got diabetes aren't going to need to be thinking of. So I'd say for me, the biggest challenge was finding the optimal level for me to perform. You know, in terms of everyday life, you know, I had it under control. Like I said before, I got frustrated every now and again, but I've got, you know, my girlfriend and my parents and my friends who I can rely on if I ever need to. And I've seen people with diabetes as well who have performed at that level. So in terms of like off the field, I think I manage it pretty well. It's just, it took me a good while to find what works on the field. And thankfully now I've got that routine pretty nailed, I think. And, you know, every game I'm doing the same things to get the as close to the same result as possible. You know, some days, like some games you have where you've done everything the same, for some reason your sugar levels are just sky high.
I think.
And that's what people don't understand. People who haven't got diabetes don't understand why I might be a little bit more fatigued on this particular day, or I might need a juice on this particular day because I do the same things. Just sometimes it doesn't quite work, which can be frustrating. So as much as I can, I've got it down to a T and it works, you know, 95% of the time. But like you guys all know, it's sometimes doesn't matter what you do, you can't help it.
It's a good old saying, if the wind changes direction, diabetes has gone a new direction with it. And I think that's just diabetes for you. It, 1 minute everything can be fine, and then the wind decides to go northwesterly, and before you know it, your blood sugars are playing havoc with you, and you're trying to establish what's happened, and you can't pinpoint what it is. Or you put your favourite blue t-shirt on, as somebody says to me before, and diabetes says, I don't want to wear this today, so we're going to play havoc with you so that we can't do anything. And I think that is where people don't realise how challenging it is, because you could be doing everything the same every single day, but no day is ever the same for you. And I know that you've just, as we've said, you've just come up to your 13-year anniversary. Is there anything you wish that you had known when you were newly diagnosed with diabetes that you would have liked to have known then rather than what you've learned now, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think all the learning that I did was really good. I would like to have known what works in terms of playing football. I think at the start, it was quite an anxious time at that age trying to stay as normal as possible in terms of my football. I think I did a pretty good job of it, but I didn't know any professional footballers who had diabetes then, so I couldn't really ask anyone what works for them. It might not have even worked for me. I would have liked to have spoken to someone like that. But yeah, I probably would have just said to myself what works for me now and not to panic, because it's going to work out and you're going
to
be okay.
I think that's the biggest thing we need to remember, is I think we're all guilty of this. We look at things and start panicking and we don't take a step back and think, right, what can I do to try and fix this? And I think that's great that you've highlighted that, is like the don't panic section. It's, if something goes wrong, it's easy enough to fix, and there's always something that you can do to kind of maneuver your way around about that problem.
Yeah,
100%. Jack, I'd just like to ask about the previous one. You mentioned like fatigue and stuff. How do you deal with that as a footballer? Do you have to like stop, or do you just like power through?
No,
it?
Matt was a bit.
No, so good question, both of you. It took me a couple of years, but my mum came across a study which related to your sugar level range based on how quickly you fatigue at high level exercise. And it was basically the higher sugar level was the faster you're going to fatigue. That was the basis of the study. So I came to, after constant trial and error, I came to find the right version of where my sugar levels need to be. And it's not in terms of, it doesn't get as bad that I need to stop, but sometimes if my sugar levels are high, I can definitely feel the difference in the way that I'm feeling physically.
I was going to say, because I found out if I keep doing things while my sugars are sort of higher, I end up suffering for it a couple of days afterwards.
Yeah, no, I can't really stop if I'm in the middle of a game, to be honest. I've got to keep powering through, but yeah, it definitely did teach me a lesson that you really need to be switched on and on top of my sugar levels to make sure that I'm performing at the best level possible.
And that's, I think that's great to hear as well, because I think a lot of people don't realise, even myself, I never used to realise that if my blood sugars were high, I sometimes feel like I'm carrying a ton of bricks in my legs, as if they're just tired and they're not wanting to do what I need them to do. And I think it's great to hear somebody say that it is actually a thing, because I used to just dismiss it and put it down to, oh, it's because I've not done enough movement this day, or I've not done that, or I've not been as active as what I normally do. And I think it's great to hear somebody highlight that it's actually fatigue that's happening, and it's just part and parcel sometimes with diabetes. So we all know that type 1 diabetes is, it's normally classified as a physical condition, but I think that recently there has been this big shift as well on the emotional side of diabetes, like the burden attached with it, as we know you've just said, like the having to think about things and be more kind of understanding about things. Could you describe any experiences of diabetes stress or burnout that you've ever went through? Or if you've never went through or you don't feel comfortable sharing, what's your kind of thoughts on diabetes burnout and exhaustion and stress?
I can absolutely understand why people go through the burnout that's related to it. Like I said before, I've been so lucky with the support system that I've had around me. And also the examples of seeing my friends perform at top levels with type 1 diabetes as well. So that's definitely helped me in all that. I have days every now and again where I'm just in a rubbish mood because I'm sick of being a diabetic, and I just need to vent. I just speak to my girlfriend and get it off my chest the way that I'm feeling. And, you know, she always makes me feel better, and that definitely helps. But no, I can absolutely understand why people have that burnout of whenever I get fed up. You know, it only lasts a couple hours to a day where I'm sick of it really. So I always manage to get through it really quite quickly. But I think, you know, if people are struggling with it, then what always helps with me is talking to someone and telling someone about it, and just trying to work through that and take my mind off it, and then going out and doing something that, you know, always makes me happy, where it's going to my favorite restaurant or just jumping on the PlayStation or the computer and playing games just to escape for a little bit, really.
And I think that's great to hear that you know about burnout and you know how to target it and try and prevent it from getting to the point where you feel that it's taken over your life in a way. Because I think we all have experienced that. I'm sure everybody's experienced burnout or stress at one point. And I think we've all had these points where things get put to the side. You're like, I don't want to deal with diabetes today, and I just don't even want to take Jags. And I think we all go through that. But it's great to hear that you've got such a supportive partner and a network round about you that you can vent things off with. And I think that that is the biggest thing that you need, is to be able to have somebody to vent to, or a group of people that you can basically go out and speak to, or they can help just rationalise things with you and help you get back on that sort of level-headed effect. Is, I don't know if that's the right way to kind of approach and say it, but like, it make your mind more clear in terms of, right, this is what I need to do, and this is what I'm going to do. And I think we all have the days as well where we just don't want to do diabetes, and basically what we're doing is, rather than doing a great job, we're just doing enough to get by with it. And I think that's a great thing as well, that you have highlighted these things. Sometimes you just get tired and you don't want to do diabetes, and that's okay to have that. So that's great to hear. So what I'm going to do is, that is my section done. It has been fantastic getting to hear about your story and your journey with diabetes so far. And I can't wait to hear, even though I don't know football, I can't wait to hear a little bit more about your experience with football and things like that, that Tom's going to go. So I will pass you back to Tom, and thank you for taking the time out.
No worries, mate. Thank you for having a chat.
Fantastic chat, guys. And some quotes that Belinda has quoted from you, Jack. T1D is not a universal handbook. Absolutely. Don't panic. It will all work out. What a fantastic opening 20 minutes to our diabetes chat here. Okay, so now let's talk about football, right? To kick us off, literally, we've got a question from Leon. Let me just get it. It's just jumped away. Where's it gone? He said, is it soccer or football? What is it, Jack?
Depends what country I'm in, mate.
So right now, football,
always,
right?
nah, it's always been football. To be honest, growing up in New Zealand at the start of Australia, it was soccer, to be fair, but the older I got and the more clued in I got, it became football.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your football journey? Where did it all start? Where did it all literally kick off? Like, I guess you were starting from a young age, playing for grassroots football teams. What sort of then led you to kind of go down the sort of career path in becoming a footballer? What did you have to do? And yeah, share a little bit about that.
So I played, you know, nearly every sport under the sun, but for me, football was always the special one. And I actually started playing at lunchtime in New Zealand. There was only about six or seven of us in the corner of the rugby pitch that we would hog, really, and play football, where the entire rest of the school was playing rugby. If you know anything about New Zealand, you know that's the national sport, and there wasn't too much football going on, especially 20 years ago. So yeah, I played football in New Zealand up until I left to move to Australia with my family, moved to Perth on the West Coast. And that's really where my football development kicked off. I was playing football, rugby, and judo every single week. And I loved all three, but for me, football was always the best one. I was, you know, playing at a decent level. I was being identified in talent ID camps and playing for, well, it was called the state teams, but over there, I'm not, it's like a district representation team where you'd all travel to one part of the country and play against all different districts from around the country. So I was doing that. Got called up to the national team when I was young at the under 17s level and moved away from home when I was 16 as well to live on the other side of the country with a football scholarship with,
wow,
15 other boys that age, and finished my school and basically learned how to become a professional footballer there. And that was sort of the age, it was just before that, where I decided, like, right, football is what I'm going to do. And I stopped judo and I stopped rugby and put all my effort into football.
Yeah. And then you moved back to Scotland,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So that's where I did all my development. And I was playing up until I was 21 in Australia, and I just got to a stage where I thought, I'm not really getting that opportunity there. I need to go and look for it. Otherwise, I'll be kicking myself for the rest of my life, maybe. So jumped on a flight and headed back to Scotland on trial. And thankfully, managed to get a 6-month contract at Greenock Morton and got my foot in the door, and it just snowballed from there.
Absolutely. And what about sort of some career highlights for you? What sort of moments have stood out the last couple of years? I guess there's so many, but is there any sort of specific moments you want to share?
So I'd say the first would be captaining my country at under 17s level. That was really, really special. I'd love to play for my country again. And then especially over the last couple of years, getting promoted with Cambridge out of League Two, winning an FA Cup game at St. James's Park in front of 52,000.
Amazing.
Cambridge as well. That was incredible. That will stay with me forever. And then more recently signing with Bolton, which is such a massive opportunity and a massive club for me. I had a really good couple of seasons at Cambridge and was identified and you know, offered the chance to come and play at Bolton, which I'm really grateful for. And it's such a big club and such a massive opportunity for me as well. So I'm really enjoying it.
Brilliant stuff. And you're a defender, right?
Yeah.
And have you always played that position, or did you start as a striker and you move backwards?
Basically, yeah. I started in the middle of midfield, ran around, got on the ball all the time, and then I'm left-footed, so they chucked me out wide on the left. I was a left winger for a good couple of years, and then all of a sudden, in a growth spurt, went from one of the shortest to one of the biggest of my age. And yeah, the coach just said, I'm going to stick you at the back today, and basically play centre-back for the next 5 or 6 years before moving to the UK, where I moved a little bit out wider again and be left back, left wing back, left centre back.
Yeah. And good old Wikipedia with my research. You've played over 200 games, and I think you've scored at every club you've played for to date, except Bolton. Like I say, you're playing for Bolton right now. Hopefully, when you come back from injury, you'll be netting a few goals.
Yeah, 3-year contract. So if I can't score within those 3 years,
absolutely. Okay, mate. So let's talk about diabetes and playing football with diabetes. Okay. So obviously, Diabetes hasn't stopped you with your determination to live a sort of active and physical lifestyle. How do you sort of manage your diabetes with such a physical lifestyle, with training a lot? Assume you're training a lot, traveling to games, playing matches. What's the sort of how is it for you with managing and do you have a team that support you to do that, or is it pretty independent for you to manage?
Yeah, managing is pretty independent. I speak to the doctor if I ever need anything, and the physio always knows what to do in case of an emergency. On game day, the physio's always got my bottle of Lucozade in his bag for whatever reason.
Yeah.
If I do go down, I tell him just bring the bottle on, because more often than not, it'll be because
nice.
Of that. But in terms of managing it, you know, it took me a good couple of years to find what did work for me. And I've just stuck to it really since then. I've got my pre-match meal routine the night before and on the day, how often I'm doing my injections and when I want to be doing my last dose of
mm-hmm.
before the
yes.
game.
How do you find that? Is it a couple of game couple of hours before? Do you tend to eat, or?
Yeah. So I'll have my last meal before a game, about 3.5 hours prior to the game, which is when I want
mm-hmm.
to be doing my last dose of insulin.
Because
I feel like when I get into the change rooms and getting ready to go out and warm up, I've had, you know, nearly 3 hours since I've had that insulin, so my sugars have completely leveled out. And that's a really accurate score of where they are. But now that I've got the Libre Freestyle, it especially know what direction I'm going in if I'm still changing.
Of course.
So,
and do you manage that yourself when you're in matches? You might come check on the sidelines, I guess, or at halftime, or do you have your physios and doctors who are monitoring that as well? So if they're seeing drastic changes, they'll make you aware of it. What sort of things are in place for that?
No, so I just check loads of times leading up to the warm up and the kickoff,
mm-hmm.
And then I'll go out at play the first half, come back in. Check immediately as I get in at halftime, have a bit of juice or do an injection if I need, and then that's it. Yeah, I've got no one that monitors it and no one that checks it, and I don't check it during a game.
Yeah.
In my head, my mindset is right when it's game time, it's game time. I've got to
yeah.
put all my focus on this.
Absolutely.
But like I said, the doctor's always there on the side of the pitch, and the physio has always got the bottle of Lucozade in case, whatever reason, which has actually happened this season, I've gone low on the pitch and needed it fixed.
And what happens in that sort of situation, Jack? Do you come off
Just
and
sit
you
down.
Have, yeah, like, and I'm, so talk us through that experience then. So how low were you, and were you feeling the symptoms, and then how long did you go off on, and was the referee supporting, like, for you to come back on, and what was the sort of procedure of it all?
Yeah, so it's only happened maybe 3 times in my entire life of playing football, but one of them was earlier on this season. It was MK Dons away, and for about, it was halfway through the first half, and for about 5 or so of the minutes leading up to it, I thought, something's not right here, I'm not feeling well, and I thought, there's no way it could be my sugars, because I was spot on before I went out, but no, the symptoms were there, and I thought, I'm gonna have to get a juice here. And then all of a sudden, we got awarded a penalty. I knew it was gonna take at least a couple of minutes to settle everyone down and get the penalty going and all that. So I literally just ran over to the side, grabbed the juice, and ran back to the halfway line. And as our player was stepping up to take the penalty, I was just finishing the bottle of Lucozade and thinking, right, I'm gonna be okay here. But in the past as well. If I do go low, I just sit down and just pretend that I've got an injury. I know a lot of people are going to think, oh, typical footballer faking an injury, but I just sit down and the physio comes on, he gives me the juice, and he just plays with my knee or plays with my ankle for as long as genuinely possible to give me all the chance to feel
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
But
if you've got medical on your side to like play with your knee, that's kind of pretty cool.
No, they know that they play the game. They know exactly what's going on. So, I'm quite lucky in terms of how fast the juice works for me. I drink the entire juice,
yes.
and within a couple of minutes, I'm good to go again. So,
and what sort of levels are you when you typically start a match and like during a match? Do you find, like you say, you've pretty much established a routine and a system now, and obviously you've got that support network with the physios and the doctors and the teammates supporting you. But do you feel your levels are pretty much stable, like consistently over different matches? Like you see the same sort of results?
Yeah, more often than not, if I've done the exact same things, I'm going to get close to the same result.
Yeah,
like I said, there's a whole range of things that can affect my sugar levels. Though I feel like my nerves affect my sugar levels. The heat definitely does. But ideally, in a perfect world, I'll go out to play with my sugar levels flat between 7 and 8. That's where I feel physically at my best. Mm-hmm. And you know, anything either side of it, I'll just try and do what I can to get it into that level.
Absolutely, brilliant stuff. And what about, like you mentioned, obviously eating and things like that? Do you particularly look at what you sort of eat, especially before training or match days? Is there any sort of food that you typically have, or is the club supportive to ensure that they sort of cater for your needs as well? Or you can pretty much go for whatever food's available?
To be honest, even if I wasn't diabetic, I think I would eat the same thing before a game. The meal that I have on a Friday night before a Saturday game, I'll have chicken and rice. Try and get as much protein as I can, and a little bit of carbs, and then on a game day, I'll have scrambled eggs and one of my smoothie shakes and some toast, and that's really what I stick to. I feel like that the way that I've figured out how much insulin to do and when to do it and all that, it gets the same results. In terms of the club catering, you know, we've got access to breakfast and lunch, mm-hmm. that the chefs put on. They've got a selection of different proteins and carbs that you can have. So, they've got everything that I could possibly need to do what I want. And then it's just up to me to pick and choose what I want to have it and when I want to have it.
Absolutely. And do you sort of follow any sort of I don't know, like low carbs or low glycemia index foods, or you're happy to eat whatever really and adjust it with the insulin?
Yeah. For training, especially during the season, I'll try and stick to a more higher protein with a bit of carbs chucked in here and there, more for my mood and my, than anything else. But I'm not super strict on all that stuff because I've had it for so long. I know what works, and I know the diet that I'm on seems to get the best out of what I'm doing. So, like I said, I've got a whole range of foods and fruits and lunches and breakfasts, cereals available at training. And then when I'm home, I'm just trying to be moderately healthy to stay in the best shape. You know, every now and again, you have a little cheat meal or something to enjoy.
Of course.
But for the most part, you know, it's just trying to stay in as good a shape as possible to play football.
Absolutely. And when you're not obviously training and competing, what do you sort of do to switch off in terms of like living a healthy and active lifestyle? Are you like sort of hitting the gym like most days, or swimming, or what sort of exercise do you do? Or like you say, it's just, no, you need some time to recover, both physically but also mentally, to like prepare yourself for the next day. And also, do you find the next day after you've had intensive training or a match, how is your diabetes management that day? Is it this like quite steady, or do you find it might be a bit bumpy, or what's it sort of like?
So in terms of training, you know, everything is facilitated at actual training. I don't really need to go off and do anything extra. We've got, you know, we train, we play football, and we're in the gym afterwards as well, so I get all of that looked after. After high level exercise, I'm definitely very, very sensitive to my fast acting insulin. I almost need to half my dosage. And then the next day, it's a little bit bumpy because I am trying to get a bit more carbs and recovery foods into me, which is more likely to affect my sugar levels than on a normal training day.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you talk to your teammates about your diabetes? Both your current club, Bolton, they do, yeah?
Yeah, they're always asking questions, cracking jokes. You know, they find it really interesting, to be honest, but they also get a good giggle out of it, and it's not in a malicious way or anything like that.
No.
I get on well with them. They crack jokes, and they ask me genuine questions about it as well. So I almost feel like a bit of a novelty in the change room sometimes, because, you know, everyone wants to see what's going on and what you're doing and have a bit of a laugh with it.
I love it. And also, I think it's very important. We've had some amazing sports athletes like yourself come on. We've had Hannah McCook, Mandy Marquardt, and you this evening, raising diabetes awareness and showing us that nothing should stop us from doing things like this. And I know the recent FAWB publications document published the guidelines for raising that awareness for coaches with children in their grassroots teams and in football, showcasing about diabetes and the information about the symptoms and how coaches can support people with diabetes. And I think this sort of document, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but I think it's a great document, not only for football right now, but hopefully there will be more documents for all sports, so that coaches and teams can support them people living with diabetes, right?
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I mean, every coach I've ever had has basically been me having to educate the coach about what I'm doing. But I had one coach actually at Greenock Morton. His son was type 1 diabetic. So as soon as I went up and I said, "Look, Gaffer, I need to have a chat," and he said, "Like, don't worry, like, I've got it all covered.
Yeah,
if you ever need anything, let me know." But at the same time, I've never really had a bad experience with the coach. They've all been fantastic and listened to what I've had to say and basically left me in charge of just dealing with it, everything. And if they ever can do anything to help, they just say, give us a shout. You know, every now and again in training, my sugars go low, I'd say, "Gaffer, I need to grab a juice." And he's like, "No worries, off you go." And there's
back
there's
you come no when argument. You're ready.
Yeah, exactly. There's no arguments. They're not making me feel bad about it or anything. They literally say, "All right, no worries, do what you need to do." And get back in and as soon as you can. So,
nice one.
The education that the coaches could have access to, I think, will definitely make things a lot better for new diabetics coming through and people who might be nervous about joining a new team or joining a new group. If they can go into an environment where a senior figure has that knowledge and can put your mind at ease and just let you get on with it, I think that's really incredible.
No, great. And what about parents that are listening in right now or will tune back on the podcast with their children who have diabetes? What sort of advice would you give them right now who are playing football and I guess managing their diabetes the way they can? Because we've all got diabetes, but we're on our own sort of pathway. But what sort of thoughts have you got on that? What sort of advice would you to give to them parents who have got children who are very active and very sporty and enjoy playing football?
Yeah, I think hopefully I can be an example to show that if you're trying to do as many of the right things as possible, it's definitely possible to go out there and achieve what you want to achieve. And also, if something's not working for your child that might have worked for another child, you know, don't panic, because that's quite normal, really. You're going to have to do a lot of trial and error and roll with the punches and figure out what specifically works for you. But just know eventually you are going to be able to figure out what works and what doesn't work, and you'll find your routine and it'll just become absolutely second nature. So I think that it can be really difficult, especially for parents who've got young kids that are learning it.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite lucky. I was a teenager. I was somewhat had my head screwed on at that stage, and I was still young and stupid. But it will balance out. You will find what works and what doesn't work, and it'll all be all good.
Absolutely, and I think, like we said as well, with the new policies and educating coaches and things like that. Also, there's obviously, I don't know if you're aware, like the diabetes football community, which Chris Bright, which I know you know, Chris. There's things like this, which are absolutely amazing, raising awareness for diabetes. But also, I just want to finally, with our sort of last 10 minutes now, is talk about peer support and your sort of advocacy work that you've done, really. And I can see on the line, Leslie from Lachlan's Legacy. I know you're a ambassador for Lachlan's Legacy. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so as much as I like to say I'm ambassador, I really must be the worst ambassador I've ever had, because for whatever reason, whenever I've got an event going on, I'm either in surgery or I've been sick, or I can't, just for whatever reason, I just can't quite make it there. So I really have felt quite bad about that. But no, Leslie and Lachlan are doing a fantastic job raising awareness for diabetes and in the football community, especially up in Scotland. I know they've been doing a lot of fantastic things. So I'm happy to speak to, you know, young people who are going through this. There are other diabetics who aren't quite sure what's going on. You know, I know I would have really, well, I definitely did appreciate having that support system when I was younger, having someone to see, oh, they can do it, that means I can do it. That definitely helped me. So yeah. I just try to put myself on the other side and be that person that people can say, oh, you know, he has a tough time every now and again, but for the most part, he's got it under control and he's doing what he loves, and it's not stopped him.
Yeah, 100%. And I think having these opportunities where we can talk and we can listen to you, share your story and normalize things, it really helps all types of listeners, parents, people with diabetes, children, adults, everyone. For you, Jack, peer support, what's your views on peer support, and what would you say are the sort of important factors of connecting with others? I know you mentioned before with Gary, the sort of network you've got around you, your family and friends and your girlfriend, and in the moments where you can just kind of offload a bit and just talk. How important is it to talk to people about diabetes, as well as other things, of course. But what does peer support mean to you?
Yeah, I think it's really, really important. Like I said a load of times here, I've been so lucky with the support system that I've got, and the friends and the family and my girlfriend that are around me and help me out whenever I am having that rubbish day. Also, another thing that I think massively helped me a lot is being in that professional environment where I have something to 100% focus on and work towards and drive towards. I think having goals to keep your mind occupied and keep your mind sharp and, you know, on a target, that definitely does help in terms of dealing with diabetes, and also being in a change room environment. You know, that sort of support group that I've got in there, where if for whatever reason I'm having a rubbish day, one of the boys will crack a joke. Doesn't have to be about diabetes, can just be about absolutely anything, and then all of a sudden I'm back, I'm in the room with them, I'm laughing, I'm having a joke, and it doesn't seem all bad again. So I think, if you've got access to, you know, anybody to talk to, whether it's in a team environment or you've got someone close to you, it helps me massively when I'm having those rubbish days, but also just day to day, it just helps keep my mind occupied and just keeps me feeling like, you know, another one of the normal guys that doesn't have to deal with diabetes or anything like that. You know, for the most part, you know, I feel like a normal person. Every now and again, you think, oh, I've got diabetes, no one else has to deal with it, this sucks. But then, yeah, like I said, all of a sudden you're back in the room and you're just another one of the member of the team who's all trying to strive for the same goal.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess it always brings it back to, isn't it, as well, mental health and the importance of having support networks for you to reach out and talk. And I love how you've got them connections with your family and friend and your teammates, and you can sort of lift each other up in moments where you're feeling a bit rubbish or down. So yeah, it's absolutely great, and it's important that people have these things in place.
The team won't even know that I'm feeling rubbish, but it's just the impact that they will have on me.
They probably don't even realize it after time. They're just having that sort of fun, sort of banter thing that you do with your mates, really. But it can really lift you up when you are feeling rubbish that day, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. It makes a difference.
Okay, then. Gary, I wanted to shoot over to you before we round up with a few little small things. Did you want to maybe talk about stigmas, because I know that was down for Kez, but unfortunately Kez is feeling a bit poorly tonight. So Gary, I'm putting you on the spot here. Did you want to shoot that last section before we round up for the evening?
Yes, certainly I can do that if you just give
nice
me
one
2 seconds. I am just so
he's lost the document, hasn't
no
he?
I've got the document right here. I will have you know I will have you know, I have
I'll
the
lay
document.
Off then.
But for me, because that wasn't my section, Norm, I have to go to the section that I require.
I know.
But normally I would just normally I
I'm not blaming you, don't worry.
And to be fair, Gary, and to be fair, every week I print out the document, and I've just realized I've gone to my final page. And my son, who's nearly 3 in April, has absolutely just like got the pens. He's got orange and a blue pen, and he's literally just cut. He's literally covered it. I will have to tweet it out later on. So I'm trying to read half of these things, and I just can't.
You can't do that to a digital copy. That's why emails a PDF to you.
Absolutely. Know, that's why as well. You don't leave paper out in the table when you've got kids, Tom, because you know that they like to draw, and that's your problem. You left paper, at least it wasn't the walls as well, so that does takes a little bit of the strain off. So
I mean, there's nothing saying there won't be a wall covered later. We'll never know.
Let's not put that out there, Norm, because if that happens you're going to get the blame for this. So Jack, we're just going to go through a couple of quick questions round about, or a wee bit about your thoughts round about things, and it's what's your kind of thoughts around about stigma that's attached to diabetes, and how does it make you feel when people put these stigmas out? And I think we can all know these sort of stigmas that we're talking about, the jokes that are always flung at us in TV shows and things like that. And how do you think that impacts, and what do you think impacts people with diabetes, and how do you think that it needs to be addressed or looked at to try and remove these stigmas?
I think it's just keep on with the education. You know, you always get the stigmas. Can you have the chocolate? Or are you allowed to eat that? Or what can't you eat being a diabetic? When it's someone I don't know, I enjoy saying I can have whatever I want and seeing their facial expressions change, really. But the boys at training, they all know, they're clued up on what I can have everything, but their favorite running joke is if ever I've got a chocolate bar after a game or something like that, their favorite joke is you be careful with that, Jack. But you know, there's always those stigmas that you're gonna have to deal with, I think, while we're still trying to do as much of the education as possible.
Yeah,
I think it just falls down to the education thing. People sort of group as well, they don't understand the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes as well. So, you know, there's all that education that I think people need to go through, and you know, I think we are heading in the right direction, really, because the more that the years have passed, the less of the stupid comments I've had, really.
And I think that is, I think it is education, and I think you're 100% hit the nail on the head there. And I think it is the misconception between type 1 and type 2. But I have a sympathy for type 2 diabetics, because I feel like they take a lot of that stigma on. It's people shame them for being type 2 diabetic, and it's always just put down to, oh, that's because you ate too much sugar and this, and nobody actually looks at it in a wider picture holistically round about the fact that there's multiple factors that start the onset of type 2. And I think that's, it is about that education, and I think you're 100% right. We have came on a little bit, but I do think there is still, as you're saying, there's still education that needs to be done. And I think it's, pardon me for saying this, I think that the education needs to come from media and press, because I feel they put a lot of the stigma out there. And I think that if somebody just educated these editors for major press outlets, we would potentially see a shift in people's opinions towards this and a reduction of stigma. That's just my personal opinion, and I know everybody views it different.
Yeah, no, and in terms of what you said about the type 2 diabetes, my dad is now type 2 diabetic mm-hmm. as well. And he's played sport all his life, and he's always been a fit and healthy guy. And you know what people immediately think of someone who's type 2 diabetic is, oh, they've eaten too much mm-hmm. and they're overweight and bad lifestyle and all that. But my dad's not anything like that. So it just goes to show that it's not the case, and people don't actually know why people have diabetes yeah. and then what it actually means for those people.
Yeah, and I think that I would say I feel as a type 1, I have it slightly easier, and I don't know how you feel about this, slightly easier in an easier form of diabetes. And I don't mean that our diabetes is easy, so don't empty take this out of context, but we can take insulin if things go wrong. Sometimes type 2 diabetics don't get insulin, and they're given metformin or some form of a tablet to kind of try and control their blood sugars, and sometimes that doesn't always necessarily work. And when they're having high blood sugars, so a type 2 diabetic having high blood sugars, it's more difficult for them, I feel, because they've got to make choices. Well, hold on a minute, I need to drink like 40 gallons of water now, and I need to go and exercise for about 40 minutes to try and drag it back in. I think that a lot of people forget that, and people forget, as you're saying, your dad's always been fit and healthy and active, and people just assume type 2s because of lifestyle choices, when in actual fact, it's the biology of somebody's body that's changing, and the body slows down. And I think that is where we need to be in trying to reduce say stigmas. So another question I want to ask is, and you've kind of talked about it, but how can we tackle social stigmas? And I know you say it's about education, but is there anything you feel as a person with diabetes, is there anything you feel we could do as a community ourselves to try and tackle these social stigmas?
I think, I genuinely think it's just one by one, people are going to say stuff to us, we're going to give them the correct information, and then in those people's lives, they might hear someone say whatever's related to that stigma, and they say, hang on, actually, I've spoke to a diabetic, and that's not actually the case. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's just going to spread from there. I genuinely think that as time goes by, there's a lot more information out there, there's a lot more education out there.
Yeah.
I think the realization is just going to get dotted around slowly and slowly, and it's going to grow exponentially in terms of people's education.
Yeah, and I think that's 100% accurate there as well. I think it's when we as a community educate somebody that's not aware of diabetes, whether it be type 1, type 2, LADA, Moody, and anything else in between, is giving that little trinket of information, and letting them also advocate for diabetic people as well, and letting them advocate for our community as well, be educating people that are making mistakes. And I think that's a great thing that you've just highlighted there. Now, the last thing that I want to ask is just, what do you hope and what are your aspirations as well for yourself and for diabetic care and management over the coming years? Is there any hopes that you have for yourself or the wider community, and how healthcare professionals look at it, and how the management of diabetes is targeted?
Yeah, in terms of my own, I just want to be as healthy as possible for as long as possible. And I think the better that the technology and the research is happening, I think that's going to make it a lot better.
Yeah.
I'm also, it's really good to see how much easier it is for new diabetics as well, with all the different kind of technology that they've got access to. And in terms of the long run, you know, I just want there to be a cure and also a preventative measure that means that people won't have to deal with it ever again, really.
Yeah, and
I think that's the short term and the long term of it.
Yeah, and I think that's great what you're highlighting, is the access to technology now and all of these advancements that we've seen. Because even in 2009, when you were diagnosed, the advancement wasn't actually fully kicking in at that point. You were still in the background stage of that. They were still developing and trying and running things. And I know that people had pumps at that point, but it was still like a let's wait and see how this goes before everybody gets it. And I think it's great. And I can definitely see, and I'm sure you're the same, definitely see a change in the whole perspective of how diabetes management is looked at now in terms of technology and how healthcare professionals address the condition and things like that. And I think that's a great thing. There is one more thing, and I'm going a little bit off script here. So it's just out of curiosity in terms of, because I think a lot of people would want to know this. If you were to be offered a pump, do you think it would be something that you would take advantage of, or is it something that you just feel it's not for you and you're just happy going forward with what you're doing just now?
Yeah, I've been offered a pump a few times, and the information that I was giving when offered that pump was, when I'm playing or training at the professional level, I'm going to have to take it out. I don't know if that's still the case, but at the time I thought there's no way that I'm training every day, sometimes twice a day, and playing sometimes twice a week. So I'm doing it, and I've got 1 or 2 days off a week where I'm not training, where I'll be able to leave it in the whole day, but every other time I'm going to have to take it out at some point. It was just too much hassle.
Yeah.
On top of the fact that what I do now works for me, and I don't see any reason in throwing my whole body off course and trying to learn this whole new thing and change everything, where what I'm doing works, and I just don't feel the need to change.
And do you know, I just want to say something that is fantastic to hear that perspective from yourself, because I think a lot of people always think that an insulin pump's the best thing for them, it's the best thing since sliced bread. But when you actually hear what you're saying, look at the constraint that you would have had from an insulin pump compared to taking injections. And I think that is excellent that you're able to highlight that insulin pumps and some technology just aren't for everybody, that it's down to the person's lifestyle, it's down to how they choose to manage their diabetes. And I think that for me was more curiosity on my side, but also I think it's something the community would have liked to have heard, because I think a lot of people assume that a pump, they want a pump or they need a pump because it makes life easier, when in actual fact, for you, a pump would have made your life more challenging, because there would have been a new level of how you had to manage your diabetes in terms of when you were doing training, you'd have had to have went back on injections, and it would have been a completely new learning curve, because when you go on a pump, insulin demand changes quite a substantial bit, so it means then that you can't take as much when you come off it. And I think that's a great thing to highlight for people, is knowing where your limits are and how you want your diabetes to go.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm glad that what I've got works for me. And I've said it before here, not everything works for everybody. You just need to find what works for you and do that for as long as it works. And I've found that. I found my routine. I found what I know. And it's become second nature and instinctual to me now. So I just go about my life with as little as hassle, really, and just keep kicking on.
And can I just say that I am sure everybody in the community and people that are going to listen to the podcast later on, what an inspiration you will be for a whole generation of kids that want to go into football but are scared because they've got diabetes and they don't know how it's going to work and they don't know how they're going to manage it. What an inspiration. And also, what an amazing inspiration to show, like, when you are wearing technology in the field, highlighting that type 1 diabetics and diabetics can actually play professional level sports. So I just want to say that thank you for all the advocacy things you're doing and the highlighting diabetes in professional sports. And I'm sure the community stand with me in that one and saying thank you for helping just highlight this and giving young kids that want to do professional sports the opportunity to see that it's readily available, and it's just about putting the commitment in and finding what works for you.
No, thank you. I hope that the kids can see that, and what they need to know is, although at times it might seem tough, you will find what works for you, and it genuinely will just become second nature and instinctual, and you'll just be able to go about and do everything, you know. And if people see me on a game day, they might see I've got a bit of white strapping tape around my bicep. That's not from an injury. That's to keep in my freestyle sensor while I play. So there's something that if a kid's out there and he wants to see someone that's playing with a sensor in. You know, I'll have one around my arm and they'll be able to see me playing with it in.
And I think that's a great thing. And I think you've also highlighted every diabetic's pet hate with technology when you need to stick it down with like a plethora of tape and like.
The amount that I've lost or I've been knocked off during a game, and like the boys will come back in at half time and be like, I found your, they call it Apple Pay. They're like, I found your Apple Pay out there. And I'm like, well, I can't do anything with it now. So it just goes in the bin. But,
love that.
Yeah.
Quick, get another sensor, apply it quick.
Literally. Yeah.
I tell you this, but I feel like, out again. I don't know how everybody else feels about this, but I feel like our CGM monitors and our freestyle monitors, they should have Apple Pay and our cards able to access on it. Because see, for that, I would be able to leave the house with nothing, because at least I'd never forget that
100%.
And I'd always have money kicking about me, so I think it's something that
put your car keys on it as well.
But how would you maneuver your arm onto a payment terminal? That seems a bit awkward,
Norman. People do weird things all the time.
Yeah, not wrong.
Oh, amazing, Jack. Thank you so much for coming on today. We've got some lovely comments through from Leslie from Lachlan's Legacy. She says, super proud of our ambassador, Jack. Yeah, you are incredible. Josh says, you've been a great man. Fully agree with Gary. You're going to be such an inspiration to so many kids. We had a message from Brody. I think he's a Bolton supporter. And he said, what is your favourite goal you've ever scored?
Favourite goal I've ever scored? There's two that stick out. The first one would be my debut professional goal in Scotland. I scored it for Morton against Dundee United. And then my second favourite would be last season for Cambridge. I scored a pretty good one where I scored from about 30 yards out. So I'd say that either of them two. I don't score too many as a defender, so when I score them, they stay with me for a while.
Absolutely. Brilliant stuff. I think it's been such a fascinating chat tonight. Thank you, Jack, for coming on and sharing everything with the diabetes chat community. You are an inspiration to all, and it's just been great having this opportunity to connect up. And everyone, go see Jack when he's back from injury. Wish all well with the recovery. We will all be heading down to Bolton. I'm checking out your Libra. James just says, have you ever trialed a Omnipod test kit to see if it stays on during a match? Out of curiosity.
No, well, I've never actually used an Omnipod, and I like the look of them. So it would be something that I'm interested in. But at the same time, I'm a bit worried to throw off my game day routine. It might be something that I would have to try during the off season and see how I go with that, and maybe wear it for a couple pre-season sessions. But while I'm mid-season, I wouldn't really like to chuck it on and see what happens, because I've got my routine and I need to know that what I'm doing is working. So definitely interested in trying it, but yeah, I probably wouldn't do
right
it
now. Yeah, absolutely. James says, what an inspirational chat. Thank you so much. But Jack, honestly, thank you so much, buddy. Wish you well with the recovery, and appreciate your time tonight coming to speak with me, Gary, and the diabetes chat community. It's been great. So thank you so much, mate.
No worries, mate. Thanks, Emil.